Barbara.
So for those of you that are listening to this recording, this is lesson number 6. You use powerful questions.
Okay. So, Lynn, we have so far Carson, Corey, Ella May, Jennifer Barney, Jennifer Sather, and I'm sure there are others, too.
Okay, I've got to get my book here. I set it down.
Lisa Whittemore.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Jennifer Rosenbaum is here.
Hey, Jennifer. Anybody else?
Siobhan.
Hey, Siobhan.
Hey.
Has James arrived yet? Gretchen? And Robin? Hey.
Hello.
Hi,
hello.
Is that James?
Hi, this is James. Hi.
Hi, James. Welcome, James.
You
good
know,
evening
I have a
to you.
Lisa, I have a request of everyone.
Okay.
And that is when you send in your little emails letting us know about your buddy coaching, would you please tell us which buddy coaching number you were doing?
Actually, you know what might be a good idea? In the subject line, just put buddy coaching number, blah, 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 and that way it's in the subject line, and then we just know.
Yeah, right. That's a great idea, Lisa.
Yeah.
Because there was a little bit of confusion, and I know some of you may have combined in one session buddy coaching 1 and 2. So just let us know that. Because that helps us know which, because we're keeping attendance on it, so that lets us know where to slot it. And then I wanted to pick up on something that Lisa Whittemore said. Thanks, Lisa, for your email. You said you had taken the CD to Kinko's of, Dave Ellis's
Human Being.
Yeah, and they didn't want to copy it because it was copyrighted?
Correct.
I took mine to Staples, and they did it no problem. Oh, great.
Yeah, and I took it to a local Kinko's in my area, and they also were fine with it. So it probably
was just
depends upon the Kinko's.
Well, and I tried to explain to him that it said I had permission
to copy,
and he said, well, you do, but we don't, and I can't do it. So anyway, I will try Staples. Actually, you know where I was Office Max.
Okay.
Not only did I get mine printed, they bound it for me, too.
Yeah. So whoever's listening on the call who might be a representative of Kinko's or Staples.
Or Office Max.
Or Office Max.
All of our students have permission to copy that.
That's right. Anybody have a share for us this morning, a win, a challenge, a question, anything at all?
This is Jennifer Rosenbaum. I thought I would actually share something interesting. I had I had a very difficult and crazy summer, so I wasn't really out that often. So I met up with a bunch of girlfriends this week for dinner, and it was the first time I'd seen them in a while, and I told them that I was doing this class. And it's really amazing the reaction that people give you. I think every single person I've told them, they say, oh, can I be your first client? I really need that.
That's great.
You know, it's funny, and it's the truth is I think, everybody does need it.
Yes. And Jennifer, the answer is yes, you can be my
exactly.
client.
Exactly. I said yes, no problem.
Practice.
Sign me up.
That's the nice thing about coaching that's different from therapy. You can actually coach people that you know and have another relationship with. So it does work.
I'm curious, at what point in the class do you feel that if we have no experience with coaching previously, at what point in the class do you feel that we could actually assist people in helping them?
As soon as you feel ready.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a matter of your own comfort level.
Okay.
So what I did when I first got started was I actually approached a very good friend of mine, and she was a psychotherapist and also a school psychologist and was really at a point where she was trying to make some career decisions. And I said, you know, I'm new at this. I'd love to support you in any way I can. And in exchange, I'd love you to give me feedback about the coaching. And she was delighted. So we did it for 3 months, and she made some really significant changes. And it was a huge confidence booster for me. And I felt like I could, you know, mess up and it would be okay. And it worked really well. So, yeah. Anybody else? Okay, so why don't we launch into our class for today, and we're on lesson 6, You Use Powerful Questions. And so we're going to be focusing on this whole coaching skill of powerful questions, and it is related to the ICF core competency number 6, which is called powerful questioning. And there's a great quote by Mark Twain that says, "The difference between the right word and the almost right word is the difference between lightning and the lightning bug." So what you'll discover by the end of this class is that when you ask the questions that really land with the client, that really impact the client, and that use the client's language, it makes just a huge difference in the whole coaching conversation. So let's start off just having some conversation about powerful questions. And so based on what you took away from the reading, what's your understanding of what is a powerful question? What makes a powerful question powerful?
Hi, this is James.
Yes, James.
From the reading, I understand that a powerful question is one that evokes certain thought processes in the client.
Yes.
And it actually stimulates the client to look deeper into himself or herself. Yeah.
So
it's both evocative as well as stimulating.
Absolutely. Great. Who else?
This is Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
I find it helps them focus on something other than the 50 things they were sort of generally referring to.
Mm-hmm. So they're out of the client saying a whole lot of different things. If you ask a powerful question, it kind of really focuses them in on something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Draws their attention towards maybe the heart of the matter.
Great. Great. Okay. Anybody else want to add to that?
Yeah, this is Ella May. I also wrote down, it helps the client to make choices and to take actions.
Yep, absolutely. So when we ask powerful questions, as the coach, we're coming from a place of curiosity. That's a really critical piece about asking powerful questions, because when you are truly curious, you don't know how the other person will respond. You have absolutely no idea. So you're asking a question that's really coming from a place of, wow, I really wonder about, and you offer the question, whatever it is, and oftentimes that kind of curiosity leads to a question that is very powerful for the client. So when you're curious, you're not leading the client in any way. You're not making any kind of suggestions that are disguised as questions. I call those quidgestions. And you're not assuming that you know the answer. You're also moving from a place of possibly judging the client to being completely open to what they're saying. So when you come from that place of curiosity, there's absolutely no judgment at all about anything that the client is saying or anything that you might be experiencing yourself.
Yeah, Lisa, I just wanted to extend what you were saying. This is where I like to put on my Columbo persona.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any of you remember the TV show Columbo?
Mm-hmm.
If you recall, wasn't he just the most curious guy?
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, there, we have a little
problem. Sorry, I'm sorry.
Well, the dog agrees, too.
He's crazy.
Yeah. And so I like to think of when I'm in that place, which is most of the time in coaching, is that I'm coming from that Columbo place where no judgments, just want to find out. I'm just really curious about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do not wear the crumbled raincoat, I have to tell you that.
You keep yours ironed, right?
Absolutely, at least. just an image that, that came to me one day that I'm going, yeah, this is a lot like what Columbo did.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I just loved it because it's open. I don't know what the answer is going to be.
Exactly. So the so powerful questions really invite discovery.
Right.
And as in the book Coactive Coaching, one of the definitions that they offer is that a powerful question evokes clarity, action, discovery, insight, or commitment. So any one of those things or more than one of those things may occur as a result of asking a powerful question.
The other thing I was wondering, Lisa, is to just link this to what we were doing before, is how does active listening impact or play into powerful questioning?
Mm, great question.
Yeah.
What do you all think about that? How does active listening connect with asking powerful questions?
This is Corey. I would say if you're actively listening, you'll be more able to actually come up with an appropriate powerful question.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're actively listening, you are right there with the client.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you're not spending a lot of time in your head wondering, so what's the powerful question I should be asking? It's not about that. It's really about being fully present with your client and trusting that that question is going to pop. And it does. I mean, it may take a little while. You may find yourself in your head a little bit more in the beginning, and I think that's very normal. But eventually, those questions just begin to pop because you're in the flow of the conversation, and you're just right there with your client. So one of the things in the reading, it says that a powerful question is the right question at the right time. Because if any one of us was to look at a list of questions that could be considered powerful questions, so much of it is about the timing and how that question really lands with the client. So part of what makes a powerful question so powerful is the impact that it has on the client in that moment when it's being asked.
Yeah, so I often will say, you know, we never know if a question is powerful until it's landed.
Yes. So that's the term that we use in coaching sometimes. You know, how did that land for you? So how did it, you know, impact you? How did it hit you when you heard me say that? And that could be a question. It could be when we offer an observation, anything like that. So how about, and I think we have gotten into this a little bit, but I'll ask it anyway to see if there are some more thoughts about it. What purposes does a powerful question serve? And again, you know, we may have really touched on this already, but it helps to generate new possibilities for a client. It might challenge some assumptions that the client has. You know, the client may be looking at things through a certain lens, and the coach asks a question, and all of a sudden you hear, oh, I never thought of it that way. Or, oh, you know, just the client gets very quiet and reflective. A powerful question can support or validate what the client's saying, and it can uncover some things that maybe the client hasn't really thought about. So I'd like to do a little, before I do that, let's just talk for a moment about open questions versus closed questions. So when you think about powerful questions, do you think they're more likely to be open questions or closed questions?
Open.
Yeah. That's kind of a no-brainer, but I'd like to give you a brief scenario of a client situation, and I'd like you to just listen for a moment and then purposely ask me closed questions in response to what you're hearing. So only closed questions in response. So here we go. My name is Beth, and I am the marketing director of a healthcare organization. I absolutely love what I do. However, in my life right now, it's pretty much all work and no play. I'm working at least 60 hours a week. I don't even know what the word life balance means. I've gained about 10 pounds over the past 3 months, and I'm just in this place of feeling like I've got to do something. So let's hear some closed questions.
Hey, this is James.
Yes, James.
One question that popped up in my mind is, are you happy in your work?
Great, great. Are you happy in your work? Okay. Who else? Closed question.
What do you like to do for fun?
Okay, that sounds open to me.
Does it?
An open question, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll come back to that one.
Okay, good.
Other closed questions?
Do you like chocolate?
So you just want a yes or no, not necessarily a...
A closed question is
mm-hmm.
a yes or no question.
Mm-hmm.
Are you married?
Great. Okay. Any others? How about something like, did you do something else before you were a marketing director? Have you always worked at this healthcare institution? So you can hear, well, what can you hear from these questions? Is there anything in particular that's kind of a theme running through that you can hear?
Yes, no answers.
There's yes, no answers, absolutely. What
this
else?
Mm-hmm. And moving into the past, you're reflecting on the past.
Okay, great. So it's much more about the past.
Doesn't really seem relevant to why she's coming to you.
Yes, maybe very irrelevant. Mm-hmm.
What does it do with the client's thinking?
Stops it.
It stops it, yeah.
Stops it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's much more kind of constrictive, not at all expansive. So I'd like to try this again. I'm gonna repeat the scenario, and I'd like you to think of some open questions. And who is the person who says, what do you like to do for fun?
That was Lisa.
Lisa, okay. So that is an example of an open question. So here we go. My name is Beth, and I am the marketing director of a healthcare organization. And I absolutely love what I do. However, I feel like my life right now is all work and no play. I've been working at least 60 hours a week. I have no idea really what the word life balance means. And I've gained about 10 pounds over the past 3 months. And I know that I have to do something. So let's hear some open questions.
What would life balance look like to you?
Okay, great. What would life balance look like to you? What else?
What gives you energy?
What gives you energy? Great.
Hi, this is James. What are the things that you could possibly think of doing?
Okay. What can you possibly think of doing? Okay. Anyone else?
What is something you're passionate about?
Okay. What are you passionate about? How about what's important to you about having balance in your life?
Or describe a balanced day.
Describe a balanced day. So that's That's a powerful question that's actually in a statement, but it really is a question. So describe a balanced day. So what are you hearing from these open questions that are coming up?
They cause the client to think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. What else? They cause the client to think. What else are you hearing?
It shifts their energy to something more positive.
Okay. Okay.
Might open up some more powerful questions?
Yeah. A powerful question can lead to more powerful questions. Somebody else?
Yeah, I think this is James. Yeah, I think the powerful questions, or open-ended questions, also tend to use the language of the client.
Yes, absolutely. They use the client's language. That's part of what makes them so powerful. So when we ask open questions, it really does open, it just opens up the conversation. It's much more expansive. It gets the client to look inside, perhaps, and really reflect on the answer. It usually isn't something that the client can just immediately answer, but you may find that there's kind of silence for a moment, or you may hear the client say, "Oh, that's a really good question." So the open questions, they tend to begin with the word "what," or "tell me," or "describe," as Lynn said, or "how." How could also be an open question. And so chances are when you ask an open question, it's going to be a powerful question. The other thing about these questions is that you were all tracking with the client. So the question really came from what you heard the client say. And so that ties into powerful questions versus informational questions. Because sometimes we hear something from the client and we find ourselves wanting to know something that we don't really need to know in order to coach them effectively in that moment. And that's usually more of an informational question that will give us some kind of extraneous information that really isn't required in that moment to coach the client. So when you're asking a powerful open question, you're tracking with the client, and the question really comes from what you just heard the client say. So any questions about open questions versus closed, powerful questions?
Yeah, this is LMA.
Yes.
Is there ever a time where some closed questions would be appropriate?
Great question, and yes, it would. If you want some clarification on something, then you're definitely going to ask a closed question. So the client just said something, and you might say, are you saying blah, 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 blah? And the client will say, well, yes or no, or something like that. So a clarification question.
Mm-hmm.
It may be that there's times that you do need, that there is a detail or a piece of information that you really feel like you do know in order to be able to follow what the client's saying. So you might ask a question that would be a closed question, but it just kind of fills in the blank for you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think the important thing to remember here is that oftentimes that the questions we're asking are in the service of the clients moving forward.
Yes.
They're not in supplying us, the coach, with a lot of information.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Because what we find with some newer coaches is they often think they need a lot more information than they really do to do coaching.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you could meet a stranger on the street and you could get them into a coaching conversation and coach them without even knowing their name.
Uh-huh.
Which is why when we hear sometimes from people, well, I'm not really comfortable coaching, you know, when I don't know a lot about the person or about their situation, the truth is you really don't have to. And sometimes I will do these presentations on coaching, and ask someone from the audience to come up and do maybe 15 minutes of coaching in front of the room so the group really gets to experience it. And a lot can happen in that very brief conversation. You don't have to know a lot about the person. So the other thing that you read about were different kinds of questions that are used in coaching. And I wanted to take a couple of minutes and talk about that. So one type of question was something called an inquiry. So what's your understanding of an inquiry in coaching?
This is Siobhan.
Yes, Siobhan.
I kind of see it as a question that you're supposed to think about for a long time.
Yes, exactly. So it's something that the client will kind of mull over, will take into their week after the coaching conversation actually ends. There's a great quote by Rilke that says, "Live your questions now, and perhaps, even without knowing it, you will live along some distant day into your answers." So it may be that there's something that the client is grappling with or pondering, contemplating, that doesn't have an immediate answer. So crafting an inquiry can be something that the client can take with him or her and really spend some time mulling over, maybe journaling about, that kind of thing. So I wanted to just give you a couple of examples from my own coaching relationships where an inquiry has been useful. One is a woman who came to me who was really having a hard time finding her voice as a professional woman. And she found that a lot of times in work situations, she was not as assertive as she wanted to be. She oftentimes would defer to other people. She also was experiencing a lot of frustration with her boss because she was having a hard time speaking up to her boss and saying what she wanted or needed. So an inquiry that came out of one of our conversations was, what is it to stand in my power as a professional woman? So you could imagine a question like that coming up in coaching, and the client would probably not be able to just immediately respond to that, but that could be something that the client could really focus on during the course of the week and look at in different situations that came up at work. What is it to stand in my power as a professional woman? Another situation that I thought of was somebody who was in a place of struggle big time around doing a certain project and would talk about how, oh, this is so hard, and I just can't seem to get it done, and I feel like I'm blocked, and, you know, just on and on and on about the struggle. And so an inquiry that came up out of that conversation was, how can I have this be easy and effortless? How can I have this project be easy and effortless? And so to go away and reflect on having it be easy and effortless instead of having it be such a struggle. So those are a couple of examples of inquiries that I've used. And any questions about that, or kind of when you would use that or how you might use that?
Lisa, I just wanted to add, too, about the wording that you use, too,
mm-hmm.
how important it is not to ask, what is it like
mm-hmm.
to be successful? What is it like to be powerful? Because when you all just hear that kind of question, what is it like to be powerful? What is it like to be successful? What kinds of things start popping in your head?
I think about other people rather than myself.
Okay, great.
I start thinking of one-word answers.
Yes. Yes, one word. You start to generate almost like a laundry list, don't you, of things like, well, success is, you know, having a big house in the suburbs, a certain kind of car, my kids go to private school, and you start creating this list. So a better phrasing of it to make it that powerful inquiry is, what is success? Okay.
Does that make sense to everybody, that distinction between what is it like and what is it? You might want to play around with those a little bit in your buddy coaching, you know, to you know, one of the things that I do with my clients, because I don't want to assume that an inquiry that I come up with is an inquiry that really lands for the client. So I will say, you know, as we're having this conversation, it sounds like an inquiry. I'm thinking an inquiry might be something that would be useful for you this week. And what do you think about that? And let's craft this together. So the client and I will actually work together on coming up with the right inquiry for the client. So you don't have to assume that, you know the perfect inquiry for the client. You can actually do that together. So the other kind of question that you had was the miracle question. And we've changed the wording a little bit, because the traditional miracle question is if the problem was solved. And because we don't think about solving problems in coaching, we've shifted a little bit, and the question is, what if overnight a miracle occurred and you woke up in the morning and the situation was different? What's the first thing that you would notice? So what does that miracle question do for the client, asking a question like that? What does that do for the client?
Makes them really try and see what it is they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It does. It has them really tap into their imagination and their creativity, and to think about, well, what would be different and what would I notice? So the miracle question can be a very powerful question to bring into coaching, especially when a client says, well, I just don't know, you know, either I just don't know what I want, or I just don't know how to deal with this, whatever it is. And then you pose this question, and it really gets them to tap into their creativity. And finally, there are accountability questions, and we are going to get into the skill of accountability a little bit later on in the curriculum. But the accountability questions, there in your reading, there were three questions that were asked, which, When we bring a coaching conversation to a close, and you'll notice, you'll remember from Tuesday when I coached Jane on her store, and how Jane talked about, I'm going to go and get a realtor and start to look at some places where I can open my store. So that accountability piece, as the conversation comes to a close, is, you know, what will you do, and by when? There's a question also, how will you know you've been successful? And then the last question, which says, how will I know? That's also a little bit of a funny question, you know, to say to a client, well, how will I know? What is it? What do you think I mean by that? That's kind of a funny question to say. How will I know?
Well, meaning, how will you be able to gauge the success? Have they described it enough to convey to you that they're done?
Okay.
They've reached their goal?
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. I think one of the things that I have a hard time with that question, mm-hmm. how will I know, is it's almost like the coach saying, you know, how are you going to tell me that you've done what you said you were going to do? And it puts that coaching situation into the client then saying, well, I have to make sure that I, you know, I tell my coach that I did what I was supposed to do, or I did what I said I would do. And another way of asking that question is, what support would you like to successfully follow through? Because it may be that the client decides, I'm going to share this with my spouse and ask my spouse to check in with me about it. Or it may be that, you know, the next time we get on a coaching call together, let's check in about that. So so this question, how will I know, it's a subtle distinction, but to me there's a difference between how will I know and what support do you need or would you like to successfully follow through. Does that make sense? Any questions about that part?
Lisa, just to extend that, the how will I know, it almost sets me up as a coach, as the authority figure that you
mm-hmm.
have to report in, kind of like I'm a policeman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say it sounds like a parent-child.
Yeah, exactly.
Really,
yeah, so we tend not to use that question is the mm-hmm. bottom line.
But you will find, it's in the Becoming a Life Coach, it's in the Coactive Coach. There's a lot of coaching literature out there that gives you those three questions. What will you do? When will you do it? How will I know? And so it isn't that you shouldn't do it. I think it's just something that doesn't fit as well as what support would you like? Because then, as Lynn said, it doesn't set you up as the coach to be kind of like the parent or the teacher. Okay? All right. So let's shift gears here and move into talking about the language of coaching. And one of the things that I think James mentioned earlier on in the class was about using the client's language. So based on what you read and just also in the conversation we've had so far, what do you think is so important about using the client's language in coaching?
It's about tracking
mm-hmm.
what they're saying and really listening to them. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So when you use the client's language, you're letting the client know that you're really hearing them and that you're tracking with them. It also let the client hear themselves back. So if you, either in a question that you ask or maybe if you reflect back what you just heard the client say and you use the client's language, it really has a much stronger impact on the client being able to hear back what they just said versus you inserting your own language that may come across as being jargony or, you know, you might use terms that the client isn't as familiar with. And so by keeping the language close to what the client's saying or using the client's language, it really keeps that conversation clean. And that's where this whole clean language piece comes in, you know, so that you're using the client's language and it really keeps the conversation much cleaner. How about transparent language? What's your understanding of what that is?
Well, it's kind of similar, but you actually use words.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it? That they have, like, you pull out the frustration. If I'm frustrated, then you say, what are you frustrated about? Or if it's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're pulling out particular words that the client says, and just again, it's similar to what I just said, that you're really staying with the client's language and not getting into using a lot of jargon or language that the client doesn't really understand. And so what do you think the impact is when our language is transparent in coaching? What impact does that have?
This is James. I think it's about clarity. I mean, by using transparent language, you offer greater clarity to the client.
Okay. Yeah. And how... I'm sorry. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, so instead of clouding or, you know, fluttering what the client has said by using your own language, you would use the client's language or, if necessary, another appropriate usage which would offer greater clarity to the client so the client understands better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
I think they feel heard.
They do. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because you spend your life in every other conversation having everyone having their own language.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like that, we're witnessing their life. This is paying attention to them and how they say something.
Yeah, so I think that term about keeping it simple, you know, keeping it simple really applies here. We don't have to make it so complicated. And if we use the client's language and are transparent in our language, it's much simpler, and it has a greater impact.
And you know, just the other day, yesterday, I had a class that I was teaching, an advanced class, and you can sometimes pick up on the way the client uses a word, and you can start to use it too. This client said, "My life is living the dash."
Mm.
Okay. Now, I had never heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
And so this coach said, "Oh, explain the dash to me."
Mm-hmm.
Well, the dash was, you know, on a lot of tombstones, it mm-hmm. put the date of birth and then the date of death, and in the middle is the dash.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the dash is living, that's where your life is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was really interesting because the coach in this case found out what the dash meant to her and then kept incorporating it.
Mm. Mm. I'm sorry, Lynn. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and so that client came away really experiencing being heard and understood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even in her special use of that word.
And it can, I think in that situation, and this happens a lot, it's almost like the language can become a metaphor.
Yes.
In the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So the client starts to talk about something else, and it could be something like, so if you were, you know, living the dash in this situation,
yes,
what would that be like?
Exactly.
So it's almost like it has special meaning for the client that can really serve to move the client forward.
Exactly. And by the way, we all came away with figuring out T-shirts and bumper stickers and stuff that we could do with that. It was
a whole new business, right?
Yeah, a whole new business. Yeah.
So I wanted to give a couple of other examples, and these are a little simpler, but it's just an example of how we never want to make an assumption. So a client says, "I'm overwhelmed." Well, I know what it's like for me in my life when I'm overwhelmed. But why? I don't want to assume that what's true for me is true for the client. So how can I be transparent with the client who says, "I'm overwhelmed"? What might be a response?
What is overwhelmed for you?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So what's overwhelmed for you? Say more about being overwhelmed. And that way, you know, I'm not assuming what overwhelmed is for that client. I also have a client right now who uses a lot of interesting terms. Like he says, "I really want to be functioning on all 8 cylinders. I want to find my sweet spot." So he uses a lot of terms. He rides a motorcycle and he plays golf. So he uses different kinds of language, certainly for me. So making sure, you know, one day I said to him, "What would functioning on, what would your experience be like if you were functioning on all eight cylinders? Or what is it,
mm-hmm.
what is it to function on all eight cylinders? So again, then I'm not making an assumption. What do you imagine is your sweet spot? So it's picking out those terms that really stand out and then feeding them back to the client and having the client, it's a great exercise for the client to spend some time and think, oh, so what is functioning on all eight cylinders? And what is my sweet spot? So those are just some examples of how we can be transparent in our language. So any questions, comments so far about any of this, about powerful questions, opened and closed questions, the different types of questions, or transparent language? I'm curious, what's coming out of this conversation for all of you so far? What are you learning about this whole piece about questioning that maybe is new for you?
This is Gretchen.
Mm-hmm.
And this may not be the time to bring this kind of thing up, but I have a friend who has a really tough life, and I find myself thinking about her as we were having this session today,
mm-hmm.
how I would coach him with issues in her life, like her home foreclosed and her... I mean, she just has... It's like all... this way, you know, this, she has no money, she has no house soon, you know, she has just ongoing problems that are so big that I find myself kind of stumped with how to even talk to her sometimes.
Well, I have an idea, Gretchen, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you're open to this, what would you think about, just for maybe 5 minutes or so, mm-hmm. if you actually... became her, and I did a little bit of coaching with you using some of what we talked about in class today and just kind of see what comes out of that.
Uh-huh.
Would you
mean
be
right
open?
This moment?
Yeah. Now, I said I didn't want to put you on the spot, so you're welcome to say, I'd like to pass on that, and that would be fine. But if you want to give it a try, it might, maybe there would be some insights that could come out of that.
Well, okay, we could try. Or yeah, we could try.
Okay.
Have to kind of get into the head of Kim, which I don't know if I'm completely in. But
that's okay. You can be Kim with a little bit of Gretchen mixed in. How's that?
Okay. So
tell me a little bit more about kind of be her, and so speak from I, and tell me a little bit more about your situation, Kim.
Well, it's been really rough, and I'm having a really hard time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any friends, and I feel really lonely, and they're going to come and take my house, and I'm not making any money. I just haven't been inspired to work. I cry all the time, and I Molly just left for Boston, so, and I don't know how I'm going to pay for her school or her ticket home,
mm-hmm.
and I'm depressed, and, you know, it's just really hard. I know you don't want to hear this. I'll ask you about your life instead.
Well,
same with you.
How about if we just take a moment and just kind of explore this a little bit? Would you be open to that?
Yeah.
Okay. There was a lot that you just said that I heard, and just kind of summarizing, you know, the essence of it, I heard how this is a really tough time for you, and there's a variety of things going on, such as financial concerns, concerns about your housing, that you're feeling depressed and crying a lot, and you know you feel like you don't have any friends, and that this is just a really, really tough time for you right now.
Yeah.
And I'd like to ask you to just take a moment And if you want to close your eyes, you can close your eyes. And just think about this question. What do I want? Just sit with that for a moment and tell me what comes up for you as you think about that question. What do I want?
Money.
Money. Okay. And what else?
I don't want all this stress.
I'm sorry?
I don't want all this stress.
Okay, so you know you don't want all this stress, and if you kind of flip that around, what do you want?
I want to be happy.
You want to be happy. Okay. Anything else?
I want to have friends.
Friends. Okay. And what else?
And it should be in the negative. I mean, in the positive, not in the negative.
Well, sometimes people can say what they don't want, and then I just say, well, flip that. So if there's something else that's coming up that you know you don't want, say it, and then we can look at what's the flip side of that.
Yeah, okay, that's helpful, because it kind of does come up that way, more like.
Yeah, what's coming up for you about what you don't want?
Oh, gosh. I don't want my life to be this way.
Okay.
I want to be successful.
Yeah, so you want to be successful.
I want to go back and get my license renewed to be a therapist. She's a fantastic, brilliant person.
Wow.
I'm really good at it, and it's the only way I've ever made money.
You know, for some reason, when you just said that one, I got these goosebumps on my body. So I don't know what that means, but I'm just telling you that that's something that I felt when you said, I want to get my license back.
Uh-huh.
I got these goosebumps.
Uh-huh.
So, Kim, you really do know what you want. You know, you talked about, I want money, I want to be happy, I want friends, I want to be successful, I want to get my license back.
But what am I going to do if they take my house? What am I going to do? I don't have any money to pay for any of this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I just can't do it right now.
Okay. So I'm gonna press pause and just kind of open this up to the class for a moment. So what are you all hearing so far, particularly in relation to some of the things that we talked about today?
This is James.
Mm-hmm.
I heard your question, and I think they're very, very eloquent in the way that Kim was able to get a clearer picture of where she was and what she wanted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so she was able to put her fingers on those things that she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
That came through very clearly.
Yeah. Absolutely. So the question, what do you want or what do I want, is an incredibly powerful question. And it's a very simple question. And I have to say, it's a question I ask a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because there aren't that many times in our lives that somebody has asked us the question, what do you want, and really stuck around to hear the answer and was really interested in that answer. So that question, what do you want, is an incredibly powerful question. Anything else that anybody wants to say about anything that you observed in just this very brief part of coaching?
If I can just say one more thing, I had a question come up that I didn't ask you, which would be, how am I going to do that?
Yes.
And then I thought, well, how do I answer that one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I had a feeling that that could, you know, be a question that would come up.
Okay, so without being concerned about sounding like a coach right now, if you know, imagine being asked that question, how am I going to do that, what comes up for you?
Exasperation. How am I going to do that? Well, I mean, just maybe reflecting it back, how can you imagine? Tell me what you can imagine. Remember, you know, what some of the things that maybe Kim thought about wanting could be clues.
Yeah.
In terms of how she gets there, too.
Yeah, so using some of her language about some of the things that she says that she wants, you know, I always think in terms of chunking it down, you know, because sometimes people can get overwhelmed when they think, I feel like I want so much and I'm so far from where that is right now. The gap seems huge. And the truth of the matter is, what I see over and over again is when someone begins to take a step, whatever that step is, it could be the tiniest baby step, it then leads to another step, which leads to another step. And before you know it, there's huge strides that have been made. So it's that thinking about, oh, where can I possibly begin, that can just create that vicious loop. And getting into action around one thing can be enough to affect some change.
The other, I have a question for the class. Did Lisa try to rescue this client?
No.
Nope. So that's what often happens in a lot of us when we're hearing this kind of, oh my gosh, my life just really is not in a good place now. It taps into a lot of I want to drag you out of your ditch kind of sensation. We want to rush in and rescue, and that is not honoring the client as creative, resourceful, and whole.
It's not honoring the client, and it's creating a no-win situation for the coach.
Exactly.
Because you cannot possibly rescue anybody. And so it's a matter of not taking it on, you know, and really, in your mind, seeing this person as creative, resourceful, whole, capable, and competent, and you're working together here. It's not up to you to fix it for them.
In this situation, would it be ideal to, because she has so many things going on at one time or so many things that she wants, you know, have her prioritize and break it down to one at a time or at least a starting place?
Yeah, and I might even ask so it doesn't start to feel like a lot of work or get them in their head so much. What's something that you feel either some energy around, some excitement around, what you might feel inspired to do, so it's not a should, but it's a want to?
In other words, the priority, the number one priority might not be the same as the number one thing that she could accomplish.
Exactly. So it's like where would you like to begin?
Yes.
You know, let's set aside the shoulds here, mm-hmm. and just think about that. Where would you really want to start? Mm-hmm. And that way it's, you know, whenever you start with where the client has a lot of, you know, energy, excitement, it gets them into action much easier than if they go to the should place. Well, I really should do this. Let's set those shoulds aside, and what would you really want to do first?
Okay. So notice how in what Lisa just said, you keep turning it back to the client. And maybe this would be a great place to end, or one of the things, Lisa, is the three rules of coaching.
Yeah. Go for it, Lynn.
Okay. Three rules of coaching as we're about to leave. Rule number one, the client does the work. Rule number two, the client does the work. Rule number three, C, 1 and 2 above.
So on that note, first of all, Gretchen, I'd like to say thank you for playing with me on being put on the spot.
Well, thanks. Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome. And to
can I say thank you, too, to Gretchen? That was great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yep. We all learn from each of these situations. So what are you all taking away? Let's hear from a few people. What are you taking away from our class today?
Jennifer,
go ahead, Dan. Jennifer, you go ahead.
I was actually thinking sort of off the topic of coaching, but if I use some of these questions in correlation with the listening in my everyday life, or if everybody did, really, how much closer people would be and how much...
It would make a huge difference in this world, I'll tell you. And I'm starting to do this work in organizations where I'm working with people to ask more questions rather than give answers, and I just think it would make a huge, huge difference. Yeah, and James?
Oh, yeah, client does the work, and I think that's what's what I'm taking from the session. And certainly it's the client who does the work. The client is whole, complete, resourceful, yes.
Exactly.
Does the work, yeah.
And when you really come from that place, it's very liberating. It's very liberating from the for the coach to not have to have the answers, because we can't possibly have the answers for the client. We just can't. How about one more? Anybody else?
I just want to say that I think I'll be able to telephone Kim now and know how to talk to her. You know, I mean, just not as a coach, but as a friend. It's,
mm-hmm.
It's helped me figure out how to coach me in my friendship with Kim, you know, how to deal with all that, yeah.
Yeah, well,
how to
I'm
be
glad.
In a way that isn't depleting and confusing. And yeah.
Maybe if we treat our kids like clients, that they have the answers for their own life and we don't.
Yeah. Our kids treat us that way when they ask, why?
Why? Until they get smart and they say, I can tell you're trying to coach me right now. But it's true. It's a great parenting skill to have to bring some of this into how we have conversations with our kids.
And I'm
sure.
Talking about adult children here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the teenagers can definitely see through it. Well, have a great weekend, everybody, and I'll look forward to being with you all on Tuesday.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
Bye. Bye-bye.